314 on the Red Ice Radio Network.
This is Lana, and you're listening to Radio 314. Today you'll hear from Dr. Nancy Banks, a graduate of Hunter College and Harvard Medical School. She completed her internship and residency in general surgery and obstetrics and gynecology. She'll tell us about what triggered her awareness of conspiracy within the medical industry and expand on her extensive research. Today, she's an activist speaker and author of AIDS, Opium, Diamonds, and Empire. Hello, Nancy. Welcome to the program. How are you today?
Oh, good afternoon, Lana. I'm feeling terrific.
Oh, that's good to hear. So how does one go from graduating Harvard Medical School to speaking at Conspiracy Con?
Well, it happened because I had my own illness, and because of my own illness and going to what are considered some of the best physicians in the country, and they were not able to offer me anything but pharmaceutical drugs when I knew that I needed supportive therapy, I needed nutritional therapy, I needed vitamin and antioxidant therapy. And so I had to go back to some of those studies from medical school in biochemistry and physiology and figure out how to reverse processes. And through that process of self-healing, I realized that I was locked into a traditional medical paradigm that was treating people's symptoms but wasn't really getting to the root causes of their illnesses. Mm-hmm. And so that's when I really began to look at the system that I was part of, very much part of.
Well, it's obvious that the medical industry also suppresses medical discoveries and natural remedies. In chapter one of your book about the medical wars, you mentioned who's behind this and how they pull it off. Can you talk about these intelligence agencies?
Well, I think the most important thing for people to understand is that the allopathic medical system was, there are multiple disciplines of medicine, but the allopathic medicine discipline was chosen 100 years ago by the titans of industry. In the United States, it was the Rockefellers and the Carnegies, right, who decided that they wanted to take over the educational system, including the medical educational system, because they wanted to produce people who would promote a certain way of thinking and doing business and promoting the products that they made. Because out of the oil and chemical industry came the pharmaceutical industry. And so what better way to get people to sell your products than to train them, to give them a license, to give them a white coat, and then to send them into the world? Because they are now professionals, and they don't have a clue that they're really promoting products that are being sold by these mega corporations. These mega corporations also, one of the things I did in my book, because I looked very carefully at the drug issue that's plaguing the Western world. And again, I had to go back in history and I had to look at a British corporation called the British East India Company. Mm-hmm. And many people will probably recall that it was the British East India Company that pushed opium into China. Mm-hmm. And out of this company arose multiple organizations which exist today, such as MI6 in Britain, the CIA, and also the banking industry. So I think that one of the things that we fail to do in the West is truly look at the history that has allowed the things that we are seeing today to occur.
Yeah, many are keen to the fact that the Rockefellers are part of this cabal. So how did they gain control of the medical industry?
Well, what they did in the early 1914, they hired Abraham Flexner, and they said to him, look, we want you to evaluate the medical system and to let us know how it can be improved. And so under the guise of improving the medical system, Abraham Flexner wrote a report, and this report was used to identify those universities and medical schools which would follow the allopathic paradigm and promote drugs, surgery, and radiation therapy. And those, and they would give money to those institutions. And institutions that did not promote this, they would simply starve of funds. And as a result, hundreds of medical schools of various types closed. And right now, we have we still have a few homeopaths left in the United States. We still have chiropractors. And there are one or two schools in the United States, and I think one in Canada for naturopaths. So they basically pretty much killed off other disciplines.
Wow.
And made it very hard for them to practice. And some states still don't allow these other disciplines to be licensed.
Yeah, it's pretty ludicrous. And then up here in Europe, you know, they're trying to basically ban natural remedies and herbs. So who's behind this?
Well, they're doing, well, the World Health Organization has a process called Codex Alimentarius.
Right.
And they have been, their whole goal is to homogenize the world. Globalization means homogenization under the control of these mega entities. And so the Codex Alimentarius is designed to standardize what physicians are allowed to give to patients and whether or not patients, basically it's taking away people's health freedom and choice. And they want to bring that standardization to the United States. So far, the United States has been, you know, the natural products people in the United States and citizens groups have been able to fend this off. But these are international treaties, and unfortunately, these international treaties seem to supersede constitutional mandates.
What more can you say about the role of the World Health Organization?
Well, the World Health Organization, again, is a product of the United Nations and also the UN. Remember, the UN was built on Rockefeller land in New York City. So it promotes the same allopathic system. It right now, its big project is vaccinating the children of the world, and according to Bill Gates, they want to reduce the population through vaccinations. So what they do is they sell pharmaceuticals and drugs that may or may not have any functional results that are proven, but yet they have a belief system which mandates that these things be given to people. And unfortunately, they often do quite a bit of damage, and that damage is they try to dismiss the damage as if the damage is in the minds of conspiracy theorists and nutters.
Right. Yeah, it's incredible to me that there are millions of people die every year from taking pharmaceutical pills, and yet people still don't wake up and say, this is unnatural, this is killing me. So what has gone on in the minds of the people?
I don't know what people are thinking. I don't know if anything is going on in people's minds at this point, because unfortunately, it's like they bought into a system without doing very much critical thinking about it. This weekend, I was talking to some people, and they were asking me about vaccines, and I said, look, you have a newborn baby that has just come out of the womb, and what are you going to do? You're going to inject it with mercury and monosodium glutamate and aluminum and other kinds of toxic compounds. Like, if I told you I want your baby and I want to inject these things into your baby, you would look at me as if I were crazy,
right?
But you do that voluntarily. And the information is available. At this point in time, with the internet and with the libraries, there is no excuse for people not taking the time to inform themselves a little bit better.
Yeah, we've had Janice Barcello on the show talking about basically the trauma of hospital deliveries with babies. And so what are your thoughts on circumcision?
Well, when I was practicing, I really tried to, I had a fair number of Jewish patients, and you know, it's part of their custom, so that's, you know, it's going to go that way. But the patients who it wasn't part of their custom, I really tried to dissuade from doing it because it's unnecessary surgery.
Yeah.
And in this world, in the first world, we have lots of soap and lots of water, and almost everybody has access to it. So the idea that you need to do this procedure without anesthetizing the little thing, it's just unfortunate. So I tried to discourage people. But, you know, it's very difficult if the father has been circumcised not to circumcise the son. You know, people are quite traditional, so you give them the information and you have to allow them to decide, to make a decision. But that's the thing that's important to me, is medical freedom.
Mm-hmm.
You give people the information and you tell them the pros and cons and you don't hold anything back, and then they make the decision. But then they have to be responsible for that decision also.
That's right. That's right. Now, also, speaking of Flexners, was it Simon Flexner at the Rockefeller Institute who was responsible for creating vaccines?
Yeah, because part of what happened at the Rockefeller Institute was, before they even had electron microscopes, they had this theory of viruses. But viruses basically meant toxins. Because they were trying to make the theory that almost all diseases were infectious diseases, including cancer. And so since they couldn't find bacteria in cancers, they had this idea that it was probably caused by viruses. And so they set up this whole system to find these viruses. And over time, basically what they have been calling viruses are probably products that the cells make under stress, what we call oxidative stress. However, when a cell is under a particular type of stress, it produces a particular type of virus. And some of these viruses have been shown to be exogenous, but most of these viruses are also endogenous. That means they are produced by the person themselves. So I think eventually in the future we will see that the whole viral theory is going to change and probably be dumped in the trash bin of medical history. But right now people are very much wedded to it. But it was another idea that came out of the materialism and the eugenics thought form of the Rockefeller Institute. And Simon was the head of the Rockefeller Institute. They got lots of money to promote this theory. And as you know, if you give people a lot of money to promote an idea, they'll promote it, whether it has any validity or not.
That's right. Yeah, and it was also the Rockefeller Institute who was in charge of basically making estrogen-mimicking chemicals, which are flooding the markets right now. And it's also blurring the lines of what's female and male. In your view, what's the purpose for these?
Well, this philosophy, the eugenics philosophy, although it went underground after the Second World War, it really has never gone away. And these people very much believe in population reduction. And if you can feminize men and sterilize women, you, of course, will be successful in helping to reduce the population. So part of what is in our water supplies, and certainly in our drug supplies, and certainly in the chemicals that have been released, are feminizing chemicals that are doing just that. We are finding that the sperm count in men is going down and the infertility problems in women are going up.
Wow. Yeah, you've also mentioned that because of poisons from food to the medical industry to the air, I mean, basically medical waste, all of this, some of our immune systems have shifted in such a way where the body's beginning to attack itself, right?
Well, the problem is also that we... sometimes in the West, we sometimes think we're smarter than nature. But when babies are born, the immune system essentially, let's say for simplicity's sake, has two parts, Th1 and Th2. And the Th2 is the part that produces antibodies, and the Th1 is the part that has to do with what we call cell-mediated immunity. And this is the part that kills intracellular parasites. When babies are born, because they're exposed to the mother's antibodies, during in utero, and because the also if the mother breastfeeds, they get protective antibodies through the milk. The immune system is shifted towards the Th2. Now, this historically makes sense because that's how the baby gets protected until its own immune system develops. And it takes several years, 3 to 5 years, for the immune system to develop, just as many other organs in the baby are not fully developed when it's born. So by giving an infant all of these vaccines, we kind of shift the immune system to this Th2. And in some subset of children, that Th2 is always overactive. And this, unfortunately, is leading to an epidemic of such things as allergies and diabetes and some other diseases that we're finding, skin diseases and other kinds of inflammatory diseases that we're seeing in our children.
Well, agriculture is another big aspect. So do you think the same cabal that's waging medical war is also responsible for, educating farmers into these ridiculous practices, including GMOs?
Well, again, remember, this is part of the eugenics system. They think that they, if you, by controlling the genes, you can control the outcome. But we now know that the genome is really a sort of a storage. It's like the central processing unit on a computer. And that the inputs to the gene are more important than the gene itself. But once you change the genome, the inputs that ordinarily would control its functions, which have been developed over millennia, no longer can function properly, and so you're developing products which are not natural and which, if taken by organisms, will begin to promote various diseases, as we've seen with the recent studies on rats who've been fed GMO food and have developed horrendous tumors. So I think, this is the bottom line. We have a group of people who are very powerful, who run the planet, who are pathologically ill. They're psychopaths. But we honor them because they're wealthy and they're powerful, and we listen to them. It doesn't seem to matter what they do. A psychopath is a psychopath. It's our job to recognize who they are and to be able to counter their craziness with some sanity. So we cannot expect psychopaths to behave as if they belong in society, because they don't. But unfortunately, these group of people are very powerful. They have a lot of money and they control. And we are not powerful but in that way, but we could be powerful if we would realize who they are and if we would exercise our strength in numbers.
And if we choose to not support them and their companies and their government, we really do have all the power.
Well, that's our strength in numbers, but the strength in numbers also means that you have to have some sort of spiritual awakening, and I think that's the challenge right now. The people seem to be spiritually asleep.
Yeah.
And because this is not, people think this is a material war that we're in, but it's not a material war. It's a spiritual war. It's a war because the people who are in power really understand this. They understand how you can make humans less human. And everything that they do in the material world is about making humans less human, so that we're not able to really assess the power of ourselves in order to be the best that we can be. And it doesn't matter what area it's in, whether it's in entertainment, whether it's in food, whether it's in medicine, it doesn't matter. It's the same story in every area of public life in which these people have taken control. And that's one of the things I wanted to look at, because, people say, well, you're a physician, how could you, talk about these things? But the bottom line is, every time these decisions are made, like giving GMO food to people, what happens is that people end up in the doctor's office. You have a war, doctor's office. Yeah. You have electromagnetic you know, cell phone towers and cell phones, doctor's office. You have drugs, doctor's office. All of these social problems end up in the doctor's office. So it really is important for doctors to start thinking about not just treating patients, but how does the society work in such a way that the products that people buy and buy into end up making them sick.
Now, as a doctor, did you meet other doctors who questioned all these weird sicknesses that have been arising the last 20 years?
Yeah, there are a lot of doctors. Unfortunately, like other professions, doctors often are so busy with running their practices, they don't have time to sit back and think. I mean, the fact that I developed some illnesses gave me some time to sit back and think. Because unfortunately, you know, one of the most important things I think that should happen with any society is that the people who are professional need sabbaticals. And a sabbatical is a time to sit back and think and to contemplate. And unfortunately, you know, in this society, we consider contemplation freeloading, and so it's not encouraged.
Mm-hmm. Well, as you were saying, it's basically psychopaths that are running the planet. So this is something that's beyond money for them. It's a soul war. So are these Nephilim who want to wipe out the human race, or what's going on in your view?
No, I just think there are other humans. I don't know what Nephilims are. I just think that, you know, I think that there's a spectrum of being human. And there are some people who've chosen to operate. I think and this is the deal. I do believe being a human, you have a choice. And I think some of these people have chosen to operate at a low vibrational frequency. It's their choice to do that. And by operating at that frequency, they've also chosen to try to bring everyone else on the planet to that frequency. And so the challenge for people is to break out of those lower chakra levels and into the higher chakra levels. But they, you know, they even try to block that. For example, in the United States, they put fluoride in the water.
That's right.
Which blocks the pineal gland. It blocks the crystals in the pineal gland. So there are levels that these people are very smart, and they understand energy in a way that most people refuse to understand it. And as a result of understanding energy, they're able to manipulate it. And it's quite brilliant, actually.
Do you think this group has passed down this knowledge through secret societies through the years?
I don't, you know, the societies aren't even secret. I mean, the thing of it is that nothing is secret. It's out in the open. People just don't want to look. They tell ordinary people, if you look, it's a conspiracy. But you have everybody has the opportunity to look. And you can look and you can see. But But like everything, you know, energy can be used for good or evil. I think that that's the yin and yang of the universe. And I think that these people have learned how to use it for evil. And it's up to the rest of us to learn how to use it for good. And it's not, you know, there are a lot of people who have come to this earth to show us that path. There's, you know, there's the Christ, the Buddha. There are other intuitives and people who are wise that we have rejected, but they are telling us how we can use our energy to raise ourselves up, and we need to listen to that.
I think we should also talk about AIDS and how the illusion of this disease has basically been created.
Well, you know, back in the, I think I just want to, again, I like to do a little bit of history because, you know, sometimes we get caught up in things and we don't realize what the beginning was. And the one of the reasons I wrote about AIDS and opium, the name of my book is AIDS, Opium, Diamonds, and Empire, the Deadly Virus of International Greed, is because Peter Duisberg, who is a world-renowned virologist, and he was one of the first dissidents who came out and said that what they were calling AIDS was not a viral infection, and it was a subset of the drug culture that was very prominent back in the 70s. And people of the baby boom generation remember that was around the time of the Vietnam War. And what had happened? So what were some changes that were going on in the society? Well, those changes were as a result of the Vietnam War, the heroin, which had basically not been a big problem in the West and had been kept out of the West, was now going to be coming from the East back into the West. And so as a result of that war, opium and heroin was introduced in a major way into the United States and into the Western societies. On top of that, the intelligence agencies of the West also were introducing other psychotropic drugs such as LSD. Many universities such as Harvard and Stanford received grants to test LSD, and at the same time the CIA was you know, dropping LSD into, you know, people's drinks and then trying to look and see how they were responding. So simultaneous to that, there was the women's lib movement and more sexual freedom in the birth control pill. So we had this meeting of sexual freedom, liberation, lots of drugs, and the gay movement.
Also, weren't the Rockefeller Institute, weren't they also donating to the women's lib movement?
But yeah, as a matter of fact, he's passed away. He was a movie producer. He was a producer, Hollywood producer. He produced Bette Midler and he produced Eddie Murphy and Trading Places. And he did a movie just before he died about the Federal Reserve System. His name will come to me. But basically he said that he was a friend with Nick Rockefeller, and Nick Rockefeller basically told him that they had started the Women's Lib movement because that was another population of people that they could tax.
Yeah.
And also it was a way of beginning to break down the family, because the family structure in any society, it's the family structure that keeps the society going.
That's right.
So if you start putting women into the workplace, you take them away from their children and from their homes, and that is part of the breakdown of the society. So there were a lot of social events that were going on in the late 60s, early 70s. And finally, in the subset of the gay community, they were taking an enormous number of drugs, having multiple sexual partners, and were just living an unhealthy lifestyle. They were also taking a drug which had been used for angina, a pain in the heart, which they call poppers. It was an amyl nitrate. And these poppers were because they were a nitrosamine drug, were carcinogenic and immunosuppressant. But they were using them because they gave a transient high and it made anal sex a little easier. And so besides taking cocaine and heroin and uppers and downers and quaaludes and LSD, they were using an enormous number of poppers. After about 8 or 10 years of this lifestyle, some of these young men started showing up in emergency rooms with Kaposi's sarcoma and opportunistic infections. So instead of now some of the original literature of the doctors who, when they saw these patients, thought it was the toxins and the lifestyle. But again, the Rockefeller Institute came along and the NIH supported a cancer researcher by the name of Gallo, who decided that it was a retrovirus. And even though he never properly isolated the retrovirus, they during the Reagan administration, they had a press conference. They said, we have the potential cause of AIDS, and they said it was the probable cause was this retrovirus. But soon the media started saying it was the cause. They never looked at the research to see whether or not it was even rational, and that's what happened. Everybody started. It was like people were parrots. They all just started saying the same thing, and the press was used to promote this idea that it was a virus, that it was infectious, and that everybody was at risk, and that everybody could get this. And eventually, they said, not right away, but within about 4 years, they decided that it came from Africa. So that's basically how it got started. They also had a drug which they promoted called AZT, which was a very toxic drug. It was a cancer-causing drug that was originally made to stop, to use against cancer, but it was very toxic. So they wouldn't give this drug to cancer patients, but they gave this drug to very immune-suppressed patients. And so these patients started dying off very quickly. Mm. And so that gave people the illusion that this was a very, you know, that everybody was going to die from this process. But if you give people who are this sick a drug that's going to make them sicker, of course they're going to die.
Yeah. That's right.
And so from the very beginning, there were studies that showed that these people had certain nutritional deficits, and that that research was completely ignored.
Wow. So how did Africa get caught up in this illusion?
Well, again, that's part of the eugenics issue, because because as you see now, Africa was Africa is the richest continent on the planet in terms of natural resources. And yet it is the poorest in terms of its people. But European companies and armies left there after the end of the Second World War, but the businesses never left there. So they had to find a way of recolonizing Africa, and part of it was through the World Bank and the IMF. But also there were other issues that were going on in Africa. For example, in South Africa, many of the miners who worked in the diamond and the gold mines became sick with tuberculosis and asbestosis, because these mineral products are embedded in silica and asbestos. And so they were quite ill. And when the apartheid government was falling in the southern parts of Africa, the people who owned these mines were going to have liabilities, because before, under apartheid, the miners had no rights. But now that they were going to change over to a black government, they would have some rights and they would be able to sue these companies. So right away, the tuberculosis and all of these other diseases that these miners had, the parasites because of the poor water and stuff, became AIDS. And so you cannot sue a company if you have AIDS, but you certainly could sue them if you had tuberculosis or cancer of the lung because of the working conditions in the mines. Mm-hmm. So it was a way of covering up the chaos that's going on in Africa right now. The people are being, again, like in Palestine, people are being, anytime there are rich resources on the land, people are being removed from their ancestral lands. And Africa also, at this point, has some of the richest farmland left. So there's a real push to move people off of their lands and into these squalid cities.
That's right, Agenda 21.
Yeah. And so that's what's being done. So if you can create this vision of these hapless Africans who are dying because they have no self-control, then the idea that they need the West to come in and settle their problems, it's simply par for the course in the minds of the West. So if you're President Obama and you send 3,000 troops into Mali, people say, okay, well, they can't manage themselves.
Wow. So how does China fit into the big picture?
Well, China was the reason Britain didn't really have anything that China wanted. China was a very sophisticated society. It had it had silks and teas and all kinds of furniture and rugs and things that, you know, pretty things, pottery, things that the British aristocrats craved. But they didn't have the money to pay for it, because all they had was silver, because China, they didn't have any goods that China was particularly interested in. So they hit it, because of their insatiable appetite for Chinese goods, they were beginning to run a silver deficit. And so they hit upon the idea of selling opium into China, because opium is an addictive product, and addiction, of course, means that the person who buys that product is going to want it again and again and again. So you have a steady customer base, number one. And number two, because it is such a health draining and social draining product, it would also allow the West an entry into China, because the Chinese did not want Westerners into their society. So the West was determined that they were going to break down these barriers. But of course, there were also Chinese involved in this opium trade. And once the Chinese got involved in the opium trade, they've never left it. Hong Kong was built up, and the banks that are so famous on Hong Kong were built up as the result of the opium trade. And as the result of the opium trade, the West became very wealthy. The West had money to industrialize. In the United States, some of the railroads and some of the factories, the opium money was used as finance capital for these investments. And also some of our major universities, Harvard, Yale, Columbia, and Princeton, received large endowments from opium money for people who were drug runners who wanted to now become socially acceptable and prominent.
So oil, gold, diamonds, drugs, how are these commodities being used by the elite cabal? Are they paying people off?
Well, we can just look at Iran-Contra. That whole Iran-Contra business during the Reagan-Bush administration was about using drugs to pay off people who were fighting proxy wars for the corporate elite. So yeah, it's still part of it's. Look, during 2008, there was a report from the United Nations that said that, or the World Bank, that said that the only liquidity in the national banks during a period of time during 2008 were the liquidity of the capital flows from drugs. Drugs, international drug running, and remember, drugs is only part of illegal, what we call illegal international business. Right. But it's 8% of the, it's 8% of the international economy. That's major. And so people don't look at that. But if 8% of the international economy, and it may be more if it was the only liquidity keeping banks afloat during the 2008 crisis, then you have to say, what is that? But very few people are really looking at people are looking at drugs, but they're not looking at it in terms of its importance to the so-called free market economy.
Well, and then also you have drugs on the streets. You know, it's like our government is the biggest gangster of them all, and yet we hire them to fight this so-called war on drugs on the street. They don't want to solve any problems. They want to keep the problems coming.
The drug war is solving a problem, but I think people, you have to look at the world through, there are two ways. You have to look at the world through the ordinary people's eyes and the elite's eyes, and so you have to think, you have to kind of put yourselves into their way of thinking. So the drugs on the street are it's another profit center, because And remember, almost all of their profit centers are about destroying the things that make life worthwhile.
Yeah.
You know, we talked about destroying families, but there's nothing like drugs to destroy a family's economy. Because you get a kid who is hooked on drugs, that kid is, you might have to bail him out of jail or put him into rehab, or, you know, it's a destruction, it's a soul destroying, economic destroying factor in family life. And so the other thing it has done, it has bolstered the prison population in the United States. And the same people who bring the drugs in are the same people who invest in prisons. So it's a profit center for them. It has nothing to do with what's best for the society. It has to do with profit centers for Wall Street.
Yeah, and recently, wasn't it three states? It was marijuana was legalized recreationally?
I think so. They've been trying to legalize marijuana as a result of, you know, for medical reasons. And there are some very good reasons to legalize marijuana for medical reasons. But again, the federal government is not interested in having competition. And so they really are trying to dissuade people from doing this. But I think we need to look at the experiment in Portugal. I think Portugal legalized drugs several years ago. Their crime has gone down. The number of people who are addicted has gone down.
That's
so
right.
I think Portugal has had some success in that. And I know that some of the countries in South America are trying to legalize at least marijuana.
Yeah, you mentioned in your bio that you were confronted by a caravan of drug representatives. Yeah, so I've heard that doctors oftentimes get kickbacks if they push the meds. Is that true?
Well, I didn't. I mean, the most of the pharmaceutical industry did was, you know, buy lunch for my staff, or, you know, pay for a dinner out now and then. But this is what has happened after the HMO, especially after the HMO situation took over the insurance industry, and the payments to doctors were reduced considerably, and that money went out of the community, went away from doctors, went away from local hospitals, and went into the private insurance industry, that doctors began to supplement their income, often by doing research and taking drug money. So that, you know, all of these things that happen have some insidious consequences. And so many doctors now are doing research or taking money from the pharmaceutical industries, and certainly the universities are doing that as well, which ultimately means that much of the research is suspect.
That's right. Yeah, you've brought up the free market several times in your book, basically blaming the free market. So what would be in place of the free market, and what would prevent the same people from hijacking the new system?
Well, first of all, there's never been a free market. I use
that
tongue in
cheek.
Okay,
good. That's what I thought.
You know, I laughingly say free market, because a free market is this. For example, when China was a great power and it had a fleet, it would go around the world and it would, you know, land on shore and it would put up banners and it would sell its wares. It didn't bring guns. It didn't try to take over the land. It came to sell its wares.
That's right.
When the selling got done, it packed up its wares and it went home. That's a free market. A free market are free people freely trading things that they have made or that they want with each other. It doesn't mean a free market doesn't come with the barrel of a gun. When you start bringing armies and mercenaries into a country to demand that people, for example, England fought two opium wars with China to push opium into China. That's not a free market. They call it a free market because it was now free for them to push drugs. But that's not a free market. The West has never had a free market. It's a joke. And when I say free market, it was tongue in cheek, believe me.
That's true, because it's the government is so regulated now and all these companies that we haven't had a free market in a long time.
No, I mean, in the United, look, when they start attacking people who are selling raw milk,
yep,
there's a problem.
That's right.
What kind of free market is that? That a man who has a farm, who is doing something honestly, who is not trying to harm anybody, who is actually selling a product which is helpful, and yet he is going to be attacked and he's going to go to jail because he's selling a product that somebody decides they don't want to be sold.
Yep.
He's not harming anybody, and his product is perfectly safe.
Well, it seems like they kind of have a goal of bringing in a Soviet-style government in the U.S., which would wipe out all the options. So the only option you have is the one the New World Order wants you to have.
Well, you know, look, people in the United States are like the boil. You know, you put a frog in a pot and you turn the water up, and they really are. The water's boiling. The water is boiling. And they're not jumping out. And that's the problem. When I was practicing, there were doctors who were from the Soviet bloc countries. And already that was, you know, 10 or 12 years ago, they were saying that they had more freedom in Soviet bloc countries than they had in the United States. I mean, I'm in Mexico. Believe me, Mexico has its problems. But you have more people in Mexico have more freedom than in the U.S. and have more freedom than the U.S. will ever have again.
Yeah, it's sad. People have to start not complying. They need to start saying no.
And I think that we have to support each other. For example, you know, when that farmer in California was arrested for selling raw milk, every farmer in the United States every organic farmer in the United States should have been up in arms and should have been writing letters and coming to his aid.
So how do you see Obamacare transforming?
When President Obama was elected and he came in with this bill, as a matter of fact, I was living in Maryland at the time, and at the Harvard Club sponsored a lecture with people from the Harvard School of Public Health and some people on Capitol Hill, who were actually part of the cabal who were writing this legislation. And look, I had already been through HMO is going to make everything better and brighter for people. I had already been through, I mean, fool me once, right?
Yeah.
So when this legislation came, this legislation is draconian. People have no idea. The enforcement arm, first of all, the enforcement arm of this legislation is the IRS. The IRS is not even a government agency. It's an agency which is responsible to the private banking system.
Yep.
So now you have a private agency that's going to be telling people what they can and can't do for their health. The other thing is that it's a gift to the pharmaceutical industry and to the insurance industry. The last thing, the most important thing is, though, is that it is going to take away people's health freedom, because the kinds of things that are written into this bill are not going to give people the option of saying yes and no about a lot of things. So I think that if we had a Supreme Court, this law would definitely, it's a law that could not survive an honest and a Supreme Court that had integrity.
Oh, no. Do you think this is another way to squeeze out the naturopathic doctors and the organic farming markets as well?
Well, exactly. And it's another way to comply with Codex Alimentarius, because I was in speaking in France this summer, and one of the things that I had a friend who broke his hip, and he ended up going to this doctor who actually made it worse.
Yeah.
And by the time I got there and I looked at the x-ray, because he was in excruciating pain, I said, you got to get to another doctor right away, because this is never going to heal, because it was not set correctly. But he had a doctor. He didn't have much of a choice of where to go for the doctor. The doctor did the reports incorrectly. The doctor was blaming him for it not healing. And then the doctor was refusing to give him opiates or drugs, because they have a very limited supply that they are allowed to give patients. So the doctors want to do something different. They have all these agencies that monitor what the doctors do. And so the doctors can lose their licenses and or go to jail if they don't follow the protocols. Yes. So what is happening in Europe that I saw, at least in France, is that is what is going to be coming to the United States. You're going to have protocols. You're going to have to follow the protocols. And if the patient doesn't get better on the protocol, too bad.
Well, then it's good to try and stay out of the medical system and take care of your body and eat right. Stay in tune with it.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. And I think that probably the people who listen to your show or the people who listen to these kinds of programs are the kind of people who are thinking about how can I stay healthy, both physically, spiritually, mentally. I think that we all, you know, we don't need to judge people. I think we need to kind of give as much love to people as we can to kind of bring them into the fold, because unfortunately, sometimes it takes tragedy. You know, I've met so many parents who have decided to give their children vaccines and now have children who are autistic. So I think sometimes it takes a tragedy to bring you to your senses. And unfortunately, that may be human nature. But I hope that we begin to think positively and begin to think creatively, because we have the imagination. You know, we are the creatures of our own imagination, and we can imagine ourselves in another better, wonderful place and begin to create that for ourselves.
That's right. Amen. So as we begin to wind down, can our body adapt and overcome all these biological stressors?
Mostly we can, but we have to be aware of what they are, and we have to be and the first issue is being aware of them and trying to limit them as much as possible. We certainly have to think about the quality of the food, and unfortunately, with this bill in California, Proposition 37, which just got struck down, and that may be the harbinger of some bad news for the rest of the country, that we have to have an option for knowing what goes into our body. Again, that's freedom. We need to know what's in our water, what's in our food, what's in our air. And we cannot have anything. We cannot have free markets, and we cannot have liberty without information. And that information has to be accurate, and it has to be up to date. And we have to be able to say yes or no. So that's really, to me, what freedom is about. It's about having information, knowing what we're eating, drinking, breathing, and having the ability to say yes or no without committing a crime.
That's right. Well, thank you for your valuable time today, Dr. Nancy Banks.
Well, it's my pleasure, and thank you for the work that you're doing and for trying to inform. I think that I'm pleased, because I think that a lot of people are beginning to wake up. I'm having conversations with people that I couldn't have 5 or 10 years ago, and so I'm very positive about. I think we have some dark days ahead, but I think we have some bright ones also.
I agree. Well, please let everyone know how they could pick up a copy of your great book and anything else you'd like to mention.
Well, no, I just want to thank you for having me. And the name of the book, again, is AIDS, Opium, Diamonds, and Empire, The Deadly Virus of International Greed. And it is just my take and understanding on some of the history, social events, and medical science that has taken place over the last 100 years. And I tried to put it in context so that it would not just help people who have AIDS, but people who have any kind of inflammatory process.
And to everyone listening, everything can be overcome. Nothing is beyond your power. You just have to start looking for it, and it'll be there. We'll talk again soon.
Romania.